All right, book nerds. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with David Bell, author of The Request. David Bell is a U.S. Today best-selling, award-winning author whose work has been translated into multiple foreign languages. He's currently a professor of English at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where he directs the MFA program. His new book, The Request, follows the story of Ryan Francis, a man who has it all. The job, the wife, and a beautiful child. Things take a turn for the worst when he runs into an old friend who blackmails him into breaking into a woman's house, where Ryan finds the woman dead on the floor and sirens fast approaching. Now Ryan must find the truth of why he was set up. All right, book nerds, we're now joined by author David Bell. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. I'm really excited to talk to you and get to know more about you and your book. So without further ado, let me ask you the simple question. Let's get it out of the way. Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a bit about your new book?
Okay, so my name is David Bell, and I am an Ohio native who lives now in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is an hour north of Nashville. And my new book is called The Request. And The Request is a suspense novel. And it tells the story of a guy named Ryan Francis. And Ryan has pretty much the perfect life. He has a happy marriage. He has a newborn baby. He has a good job. Everything's going really well in his life. And he likes to share images of his life on social media that also show his life as being perfect, as we all like to do on social media. And then one night, Ryan is on his way home and he runs into his best friend from college, a guy named Blake. And Blake is one of those guys who you're really good friends with that person when you're young, when you're in college, because they're a lot of fun and they sometimes do crazy things and they kind of lead you into trouble. But once you get older, you really don't want to be friends with that person anymore. So Ryan and Blake have drifted apart a little bit, but they agree to have coffee together. And Blake says, I need to ask you to do something for me. Just a small little request. I need you to go into this woman's house and get some evidence out of her house that would incriminate me and ruin my relationship, my engagement. And Ryan says, you're nuts, man. I'm not doing this. I'm a grown-up. I'm not going to go break into somebody's house. And Blake says, well, if you don't go into her house, I will tell everybody in town about that thing you did in college that the statute of limitations has not expired on yet. And so Ryan feels he has no choice, and he goes ahead and he goes to this woman's house. Lo and behold, when he gets there, he finds that the woman is dead on her bedroom floor. And not only is she dead, but he knows her. And as he's standing there over her dead body, his phone chimes, and it's a Facebook friend request from the dead woman on the floor. And then the police sirens start to sound. So it's all bad from there, and Ryan is in a lot of trouble, thanks to his friend Blake.
All right. I mean, that I think that sets up a quite an interesting and suspenseful book, for sure.
Well, let's hope so. That's the idea. Yeah.
So what inspired the story? I'm really curious to know.
Well, really, it was just the idea of we all have those friends from our past who we were maybe, I guess this happens a lot when we're young, that you meet people and you can be very quickly, intensely, and the friendship burns really bright and hot for a short period of time. But maybe it doesn't seem to be a friendship that's gonna last forever, right? Maybe it's just your friends for a summer, or your friends in college, or your friends when you work at a job or something like that. But you kind of know this friendship's going to burn itself out and it's going to be a lot of trouble if you stay with it. And so I just was thinking about that because I think we all have friends like that in our past. And then if that person came back into your life, if out of the blue that person showed up and brought with them all the baggage that you thought you had left behind with this friendship, how disruptive would that be to your life? And so really, the idea for the book started thinking about these two old friends who haven't seen each other in a long time, reconnecting, and all this trouble from their past opening up again in the present.
Man, just thinking about people from my past, if I ran into them on the street or something, I'm just starting to feel a little stressed just thinking about some of those people if they came back into my life. So I can't even imagine, being in a situation such as your book, what it's based on.
Well, it's scary. It's scary to think about. And now with, social media, because social media plays a big role in the book. But with social media, people can find you more easily and you can see those people because they might find you on Facebook or something. Sometimes it's harder to outrun your past than maybe it used to be.
Absolutely. And I think that leads really well into my next question, which is, I'm assuming that this book is sort of set in current day and time, and it's not, past or really set in the future too far. So I'm curious, I'm assuming it's kind of like a modern day time frame, but how does social media play a role in this book?
Yeah, it's set today. And it's that idea that Ryan is really kind of obsessed, as a lot of people are, maybe all of us are, who are on social media. He's really kind of obsessed with showing his best life on social media. So, if he's taking a picture of his baby, it's, the perfect picture where the baby has the perfect light and the perfect filter and like looks like the Christ child in a Renaissance painting or whatever, And so he's only like showing the best side of his life. And I think this happens to all of us when we see people on social media and they're only showing the best parts of their lives. We kind of assume that's reality. We think like, oh, that person doesn't have any problems. That person couldn't have a deep, dark secret because everything is so shiny and wonderful in their lives and they're so happy and their child is so happy and whatever. But the truth is, of course, nobody has a perfect life. Nobody's life looks quite the way it does on social media or whatever. And Ryan, more than anybody, the image he presents on social media does not line up with some of the things he's done in his past and some of the secrets that he is keeping, even from his wife, even from the person closest to him. So I think just that split between what we show to the world on social media and what's really going on in our lives was something that I think we all think about a lot now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, social media, like you said, we're all hooked on it, but at the same time, I think it's really good for a lot of people to take a break from it every now and then. I know I have on and off, but like you said, we only share what we want people to see. We're not going to show people, struggling, sleeping late, the 14-hour work days or, the depression or financial problems. We don't want to show people that. We only show the best parts of our lives.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure. I don't know how people feel when they see if somebody does share something bad about their lives, here's my kid having a temper tantrum, or like here's my bank statement that has, $2.92 in it or whatever. I don't know how people feel about that. Do people feel like that's somehow not what they went on social media for? Are they like, hey, I'm only here to see pictures of the taco you're about to eat, or whatever. So I don't know. It's an interesting question that I think we all think about a lot.
Absolutely. No, I know. I mean, speaking personally, I think about it all the time. I think that it's, people shouldn't just post that, their best lives. They should post, people want to see reality. People connect with that a lot more than just, showing the best of the best. So,
yeah.
But moving on a little bit, I'm really curious to know, when it comes to writing books, because I know you're a very well-known author. You've got a, you know, a best-selling author, and I've been reading reviews about your books, and you know, I see nothing but glowing reviews. How do you go about making a character and having a story, like a story that not only people can follow and enjoy, but coming up with characters that people connect with and really care about? Because I feel like that's a really, probably a really challenging thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, our experiences in life are so, in many ways are so different from each other's, that it's, on the one hand, you kind of think, well, you can't do something that everybody is going to relate to. You can't create a character who everybody is going to relate to. The flip side of that is that a lot of our experiences are common, right? We all have families to some extent, and most people have a job or have had a job. Most people think about money. Is my neighborhood safe? You know, whatever, all those kinds of things. So there are a lot of things that we share as people. And I think really what readers are looking for, more than anything, I think readers just want to understand characters. It's not, sometimes we get caught up in thinking about are characters likable. And that might be part of it, but I think the better word is understanding characters. That, like, if you, I think readers will go a long way with characters who are flawed or unlikable or difficult or whatever, if they kind of understand what the character is going through, and they get a sense of what's going on inside this person's brain and what is leading them to make certain decisions, you know, what's leading them to make certain choices, even if they're bad choices. So I try to remember that. I try to remember that. Readers, I think, want to understand who characters are, and if as a writer I'm offering them some kind of insight into why someone makes a choice, even if it's a bad choice, then maybe readers come away from a book saying, I have some understanding of human behavior that I didn't have before, or I never thought someone would make this choice, but now I've read this book and I understand why someone might make this kind of choice. So I think that's really where it has to begin for writers, is how can you get readers to relate to, understand, peek inside these characters a little bit.
So for this book in particular, or any maybe from past books, have you had to do a lot of like research and learning about human psychology to try to come up with, like, you know, what would this character do? Or do you sometimes just think like, oh, what would you personally do? Or like, how do you kind of decide what the character is going to do?
Well, I don't like to brag, but I was a psychology minor in college for about 3 weeks. So that was where I got all my information from. No, I mean, it's a combination of things. I mean, obviously, if most writers, all writers, I would say, all creative people, are probably always observing the world, and we're always observing people, and we're always thinking about human behavior and human motivations, and you know, why does one person hold a fork this way, and why does another person hold a fork that way, from very minor details all the way up to big details about people. So there's just a lot of observing of human behavior, and I think that's one of the characteristics that drives people to want to be a writer or to want to be a creative person, is that you enjoy observing those little and big details about people. In terms of like research into human behavior, it's interesting to do that. I have a couple friends who are psychologists, and so I frequently will have conversations with them about, now why does a certain person behave a certain way, and like how would you label that behavior? And I've talked to them when I've been writing stuff and have said, now if such and such thing happened to a person, how are they likely to respond, or what kind of trauma would they have afterward? I think a lot of that stuff only goes so far, because people are infinitely different, and you can't necessarily guarantee that someone is going to behave a certain way, that if you put, you know, a certain, you know, experience on a human being, that every human being is going to react the same way. Obviously, they're not. So then you're getting just into the intricacies of what makes people different. It goes back to the previous question of how do you create characters? How do you understand characters? People are infinite in their variety. And as long as the reader can believe it and understand it, then I think that that goes a long way. And maybe that's more important than a theory of human behavior that might come from a book or something like that.
Interesting. I think that was a very good answer for my question. You I think you went into more detail than I expected, so I appreciate that.
Hey, no extra charge.
I appreciate that. That means even more to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got 3 weeks on me for when it comes to psychology classes. So you do know more than I do.
Yeah, I don't like to lord my knowledge over people, but, you know, I did take a few classes as an undergraduate, so, you know, I was awake for some of them, too, yeah.
It's a few classes more than I've taken, so.
Oh, well, it was really, you know, the truth is that they were really interesting classes, and that kind of stuff really did, I mean, it's a chicken and egg question, you know, like, I was interested in being a writer already, but then sitting in these classes and listening to these knowledgeable professors talk about why people behave the way they behave in these different theories of human behavior, you know, it was fascinating, you know. So I'd be curious to go back and think about some of those lectures again or read some of those textbooks again. I haven't done it in a long time.
Well, I hope this podcast is giving you inspiration to do that, and you have a chance to do it.
But I don't want homework. That's the other thing. You know, so.
Well, that's the best part is that since you're the one assigning it to you, you decide if there's homework or not.
Oh, okay, sure. I think I'm going to do very well then.
All right. So when it came to writing this book, as opposed to maybe past books, did you run into any new difficulties, or were there any, did you have any difficulties writing this book in particular?
Well, the one thing that was a unique challenge about this book is that, so it's, like I said, it's about social media a lot. And without giving too much away, part of the plot hinges on people hacking into each other's email and like email phishing schemes and things like that. So there's some technology stuff like that that I did not fully understand. So I had to, I think this happens to a lot of writers. You have an idea for something, and there's something in the book that is a little outside your realm of expertise, whether it's, in this case, it's what do I know about IT and email phishing schemes and stuff like that, right? And so I found myself having to call. I teach at a university, and so I was calling the IT department of the university and asking them, how could you hack into someone else's email? How could you, how could you send an email to get someone to do this and that? And at the university, and maybe this is the case at a lot of universities or big companies, you know, we're inundated with these weird email schemes and spam and all this stuff that we're always getting, and people hacking into other people's accounts and pretending to be that person. And so as I was calling the IT guys several times and getting them to give me these long explanations of how you can do this stuff, maybe this is just because I grew up Catholic and I have this, you know, undercurrent of guilt running through my body. But I was thinking to myself as I'm talking to them, I bet they think I'm one of these weird hackers, scammers, fishers guys, right? And so in the acknowledgments of the book, I went out of my way to say, you know, thanks to the IT department at Western Kentucky University. But I swear I'm not the guy sending all the weird fish. It's not me. And it's really
I can just see these IT guys being like, talking to each other, be like, dude, I think some guy's like trying to figure out how to like hack emails, and he's just asking me how to do it.
Well, I will be honest that they told me how to do some of this stuff so that I could put it in the book. If you asked me how to do it now, like, that information just really just evaporated from my head very quickly, because I just, you know, I needed it to get through the book, and then I was no longer interested in it. Now I'm just a person who receives these emails. I could not send them or anything like that.
Yeah. It's funny. I can just imagine you have to call and be like asking all these questions. And you're like, are you trying to like hack into something? And be like, no, it's for educational purposes. I promise. I'm writing a book. I'm not trying to actually learn how to hack anything.
Well, that's always the thing with writers and doing research, is that you have to call or go meet with someone, you know, like a police officer or a medical examiner or a funeral home director or whatever, or a weapons expert or something like that. And you ask some bizarre question of these people, like, you know, well, how long does it take for a body to decompose in the ground, you know, if it's been embalmed or whatever? And they're just, you know, like, so what are they thinking on the other end? You know, because you can always just say, well, I'm a writer, I'm writing a book. But I always think in the back of their mind, they're thinking, oh my God, I have this ghoul on the phone who wants to dig up a body in the cemetery or something like that. So, you know, maybe it brightens their day to get these bizarre calls from writers. I don't know.
Well, it's probably not in things they're getting at. I feel like it's probably not things that they're getting asked all the time. So maybe it brightens their day.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Either that, or they're like keeping a log, you know, of the, they have a file on me somewhere, and they're like, oh boy, it's that weird guy again, calling us,
yeah.
Autopsies, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, anyway, it'll all come out someday, I guess.
So obviously this is a thriller, and it's a suspense novel. I'm really curious to know, how do you go about keeping a book suspenseful but not having it like overly suspenseful and having, you know, a million things going on, but not keeping it, you know, so dull that people lose interest? Like, how do you find that fine line?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the million-dollar question that all thriller writers, all writers in general have to ask, right, is how do I give out enough information that the reader is curious to keep going, but I don't give out so much information that they are bored with the book halfway through, or the other side of it is that you don't withhold so much information and ask so many questions without answering them that the reader gets frustrated halfway through and says, well, I'm not finding anything out. We've all probably had that experience of TV shows. I won't name any names, but those
Lost. Lost.
Well, those TV shows that that go on, you know, they clearly go on too long, right? That they get to the point where they have to kind of start really manufacturing drama to keep the story going, or they're not answering questions that have been raised for a long time. You know, there are some TV shows that get it exactly right. Like Breaking Bad, I think, is one that was just like, we're going to do our 60 episodes. That's it. Then we're gone. See you later. It's over. Right. So that's the challenge. So I think, the way I think about it is, almost every chapter of the book has to ask a question or feed a question that's growing, right? And maybe provide a little bit of an answer to that question, but also raise new questions, you know, so that every time a question is answered, like, oh, okay, I know so-and-so was doing this. But then there has to be a new question that grows out of that. Oh, okay, if so-and-so was doing this, I know that now, but now I'm saying to myself, why was so-and-so doing this? And then that leads into the next chapter and the next chapter. And so I always just try to think about, what information am I giving out? What little piece of information am I revealing and answering for the reader? But then does a new question spin out of that, so that then the reader is saying, there's a reason for me to keep going farther and farther and deeper into the book until you get to the end, and then let's hope everything is answered and there aren't any lingering questions left over.
Gotcha. Yeah. And just to clarify for any listeners who, when they listen to this, I was using Lost as an example, but just to clarify, I've actually not watched the show before. I just have heard from many people who did watch the show that was a problem that they had, was like, they would answer, you know, they'd pose 10 questions, they'd answer 3 questions, and then pose another 10 questions. And that as the series ended, I heard people say, like, there were so many questions that just were left unanswered. Then people were very upset about that. So
I didn't watch the whole thing either, so I don't know. But to be positive, like something like Breaking Bad, I thought did that all pretty much perfectly. That it felt like there wasn't fat on the show. They didn't go on too long. They did their 5 seasons. I'm sure they could have gone on for like 3 or 5 more seasons and made plenty of more money, but they did what they had to do and they got out. And so that's a really good example of a show that works that way.
Oh, I could not agree more. I think Breaking Bad, when it comes to like storytelling and plot and questions and like a thriller and suspense, that's probably one of my number ones, because like when that, they wrapped everything in a bow so well that any lingering questions you have or had, they did answer everything. Like they left almost no stone unturned. So now,
yeah, and it's a great example to go back to the question about characters. It's a great example of a character who was really complex, really unlikable at times, you know, really was just going off the rails. And we hung with him because he was complex and interesting, and we learned things about him. And ultimately, you know, spoiler alert, cover your ears if you haven't watched Breaking Bad. You know, at some point we were kind of like, I kind of hope he gets what's coming to him, right? Because he deserves it, you know, in some way. So, yeah. So really a fascinating show. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I know you kind of talked about some TV shows and movies and, or, you know, books sometimes leave open-ended questions. I'm curious for you, are you a fan of, and I don't know if it happens in this book, but are there any lingering questions that are kind of left open-ended for the, it's kind of like as a, like for the viewer or the reader, it's kind of like, hey, like you just like, here's the information, you decide for yourself if this is true or not.
Oh, for this book?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything like that in this book. I think that you'll get to the end and you'll feel pretty certain you know what happened and why. So I don't think there's anything to you will get your money's worth and your satisfaction by the end of the book. You will know the answers. And people will go away from this book just elated because they'll have so many answers to so many of life's questions. I'm totally making that up. But they will go away from the book knowing all the answers within the world of the book. Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. And here, yeah. I'd be really excited for someone to be like, wait, you're gonna answer all of life's you know, questions? Man, I gotta pick this book up ASAP.
Well, that's what my next book is about. My next book is about answering everything. And so it's really, people should really get excited about this one, but they have to buy the request first.
Gotcha.
That's the key. Yeah.
So we've got the request, and I'm assuming the next book is going to be called The Answer then?
The Answers, yes. The Answers, yes.
Gotcha. Yeah. And if I, spoiler alert for anyone, if I remember correctly, the end to that is 42, right? That's the answer to everything?
Well, that was somebody else's idea about the universe. I'm not saying that's mine. That's what Douglas Adams said, and I don't want to be accused of plagiarism or anything like that.
Good call. Well, I'm excited to read this book and then read your next one, The Answer, and find out.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So I'm always really interested to know, and I ask this question a lot, but it's only because I'm really interested in the answer, and every author seems to have their own take on it. How do you go about coming up with you know, the names of the locations and the names of the characters?
Oh, yeah. You know, names of characters can be tough because there are only, I mean, obviously there are an infinite number of names you could pick from in the world, right? But, you know, like, you, like if you named your main character, you know, Apple, like Gwyneth Paltrow named her child or whatever, that's kind of like a certain kind of person would be named Apple or whatever, right? So like, you know, there's a certain number of names that fall within the realm of everyday life. And if you write enough books, you kind of, you know, you end up using names of people you know. And so I've had friends, you know, like to go way back to my book Cemetery Girl, there's a stripper in the book who witnesses a crime. So the police have to go and talk to her. And her name is Tracy. And so, you know, to me, I wasn't thinking of anyone I know named Tracy. I just thought like Tracy is a name of people, or, you know. And so, but as it turns out, of course, I know a couple of Tracys who came back later and they were like, oh, of course, you had to name the stripper Tracy. I was like, well, no, I was just like, that's a name. I could have named the stripper, you know, Sally or Jane. You know, there's nothing behind the name. So, you know, you always have to deal with that. You always have to think about, like, am I naming this character the name of someone who was in my family and, or like, you know, a close friend and they're going to come back later and, you know, whatever. So you have to be careful about that. And then place names, you know, usually I like to set my books in, places that are made up, because then I'm free to do whatever I want. So usually it's like just a made up town. And so it's kind of fun to name a town because, you know, I'm probably not going to get to do that any other time in my life, right? No one's going to come along and say, hey, we're wondering what to name our town. You have any ideas? So you get to do that in books. So that's kind of fun. I just have to be careful that I don't use, I like to check to make sure that it's not the name of a real place in the state where I live, because then people from that place might have certain associations or whatever. But yeah, it's kind of fun to think up those names for places and names for people.
All right, nice. So it's just kind of, so there's no, like, you know, you don't have a list of names and you're like, all right, I got to use this name. Check that off the list.
Well, I mean, I do, you know, like I have a dictionary of names that I look at. Sometimes in the morning I walk, there's a cemetery by my house and I walk in the cemetery and I like to look at the headstones. The first thing I do is I like to look at the headstones to see how old the person was when they died. And then I calculate how much older they are than I am, and kind of like to tell myself, well, maybe I have that much time left. But then I think of the names, which, you know, are, you know, you might see some interesting names, especially some older names on older headstones that, you know, maybe you could use that name to bring it back, you know, bring that name back, or it's an unusual name. So, so the walking in the cemetery helps.
Do you ever choose a name based off of, like, people you actually do know or people in society? Like, you know, you're reading one of your books and you're reading up the description of this person or how they're acting and be like, hey, this person reminds me of, you know, so-and-so.
It never directly like that. I mean, I'll take little pieces from a lot of different people, whether it's people I know well. Or we were talking earlier about observing the world, and you just observe someone, you know, like say you go into a restaurant or go into a store. I mean, assuming you could go into a restaurant or a store freely, which we can't necessarily do right now. But you know, like you wouldn't just notice someone, like somebody goes by and they have, a weird haircut, or they're wearing weird pants, or they walk in a certain way. Or they use a certain gesture when they talk. All of those things are things that I think as writers we file away and say, remember that guy with the weird hair in Target? You know, someday he's going to be in a book, or that piece of him is going to be in the book. So, I mean, I think it's always a conglomeration of places and people put into the blender, and that comes out differently in the book.
All right, gotcha. Now, you're obviously a well-known and established writer, and you said you've always wanted to be a writer. What advice would you give to anybody who's listening to this podcast who's interested in writing or wants to become, you know, a writer or is trying to become a writer? What would your best piece of advice be for them?
I mean, I would say you have to read a lot because I teach at a university, and every once in a while I'll have students who say that they want to be a writer and they love to write. And I'll say, oh, okay, what kind of books do you like to read? And they'll say, well, I really don't read very much. And I think you're probably not going to be much of a writer if you don't read. Just like, you know, you wouldn't have like someone say, yeah, I want to be a musician. But I don't listen to music, you know, like that doesn't go together. So I would say read a lot and read a big variety of things, you know, read the classics, read stuff that's published now, you know, read popular stuff, read obscure stuff, you know, just read everything, you know, read journalism, you know, read New Yorker kind of journalism, all that kind of stuff, read history, whatever. So read a lot. And then I would also say, don't try to write what you think people think you should write. You know, don't try to write what you think people want to read, or don't try to write what you think is fashionable, or don't try to write something because you think, oh, you know, this is what I'm expected to write or whatever. Write the kind of story that you would like to read. And it's possible you've never read the exact story that you would like to read. And that means that you could be the person to write that story. And so I think that's when the best writing comes, is when a writer is saying, I'm trying to write a story that I haven't quite seen before, but that it appeals to me and it feels meaningful or interesting or strange to me in some way. And that's likely the way you're going to get originality. And original writing is likely to be the kind of thing that's going to find an editor who's interested or an audience who's interested somewhere down the road.
Nice. I think that's some fantastic motivation and inspiration and advice.
Great. That's what I'm here for.
So.
Yes.
Well, before we go, we'd love to let the audience know and the listeners know where your book is available. I know it's coming out very soon. And where can they learn more about you, or, you know, get in contact with you or learn more about your past books?
Yeah, so you can learn all about me. My website is davidbellnovels.com, and I'm on social media at davidbellnovels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Goodreads, all those kinds of places. So you can check me out there. And the request is coming out on June 30th. And it is going to be in Target and Walmart and Barnes & Noble and all those kinds of fun places, Kroger, grocery stores, all that kind of stuff. So you can find one there. You can order one online. Obviously, people are shopping online a lot now, so you can get it online. And they'll drop it off on your front porch. And you won't even have to leave the house to have all that kind of fun of reading the request. So, yeah, check it out, please. I'd love to hear from people after they've read it.
Awesome. Well, you heard it, folks. Be sure to pick up the book when it comes out and pre-order it. And I have no doubt after reading all the reviews on it, you know, and what people are saying, that it's going to be a fantastic success.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me here at Gene Book Nerd. We really appreciate it, and it was a pleasure to talk to you and learn more about you and your book, and I wish you the best of luck and all the success.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on. You all have always been very supportive of my book, so I really appreciate it. I love, you know, the book bloggers and everybody out there who spreads the word about these books, so I definitely appreciate it, so I'm happy to talk to you, and thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Well, we try to do our best, and we try to stay you know, give our readers and our listeners and people who follow us the best content we can, the highest quality content, and we always try to do the best job that we can.
Yeah, well, great. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. The request sounds like quite the thrilling adventure, and I hope everyone who picks up David's book enjoys it as much as the reviewers have. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back for the next episode of the podcast. Any final words for our listeners, David?
This is David Bell, author of The Request, and you are listening to GeneBookNerd.com.